Hello, and welcome to the Inside Infuse podcast for May the 27th, 2022. This is episode number 112. On today's show, we'll be talking about the 2023 Cadillac Lyriq selling out, the debut of the BYD Seal, and Hyundai announces an electric vehicle and battery factory for the U.S. I'm Dominic Ioni, Inside EV's forum moderator and Inside EV's editor. Joining us today is man of the world, and I mean the whole world, Tom Malogny, Inside EV's editor and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge. And Kyle Connor joins us from the majestic, practical, palatial halls of Out of Spec Studios, which today is situated in his RV in Grand Prairie, Alberta, Canada. And joining us today, we are honored to have Lacey with us from the Miss Go Electric YouTube channel. All right. So our regular co-host Martin Lee is on his own vacation adventure this week, somewhere in the vicinity of the Mediterranean, but he should be back next week. All right. So before we get going, I'd like to ask that you please subscribe to the channel. If you're watching us on YouTube, please hit that thumbs up button and ring that bell icon for notifications. All right. So with that out of the way, welcome, everybody. So today's show is, let's see, we have a situation with Kyle here, but hopefully he'll be back on to join us. Here he is. All right. So today's show is sponsored by Holley, who are once again putting on the Holley High Voltage Experience. So when I hear the name, I think of carburetors, but Holley is actually a huge company with its fingers in many different pies, including electric vehicles. So the Holley High Voltage Experience is an event happening over June 9 and 10 at the Sonoma Raceway in California. And it's all about meeting and hanging out with different EV enthusiasts and the EV curious, I guess, checking out all kinds of electric vehicles, from the ones that you can buy in showrooms to those that people have built and converted. So besides just chatting and hanging out, there's going to be actual driving opportunities as well, including like autocross, drag racing. There's some road course track lapping and a 3S challenge, which is like a side-by-side speed, steering, and stop competition, which is pretty awesome. So you can go to www.hollyhighvoltage.com for tickets if you want to check it out, or you can also choose from a selection of different event packages if you want to compete with your personal electric vehicle, take part in the car show or the wine country cruise. All right. So sweet. Check that out. All right. So let's see. We're having trouble with Kyle's connection there in Grand Prairie.
Yeah, it looks like we're not going to be able to rely on him today. He's going to be in and out. Kyle's on remote location, as we mentioned. And right. You know, whatever we get from him today is going to be a bonus.
Okay. Yeah, he's on a road trip to Alaska, and it's somewhat EV related. I'm hoping that we can get him back so he can tell us a little bit about that part of it.
I see John Check just said, Tom, I ordered the CCS adapter from South Korea. It shipped yesterday. I actually have one here. I've had it for like 2 weeks. I've just been so busy. I haven't had a chance to do a video on it. I'm going to do a video with the three different types of Tesla adapters, the C-Tech one, the CCS adapter that's made by EV Hub, a company in over in Ukraine, and then the official one that Tesla's making, a comparison video, probably in about a week or so. So, John, let me know how that works out for you. I haven't even had a chance to use mine, but it was actually a follower or somebody that watches us here got one. And he emailed me and said, look, do you want to borrow it for a little while to make some videos? And very thankful of him for that. I don't want to mention names on the podcast, but thanks for loaning me it. I'm going to do a video comparing all of them, because the other two that I have don't work. The C-Tech one, the Electron one, the Tesla keeps sending out updates to make it not work. They don't want you using it because it's not very safe, to be honest with you. So I had one. I did a video of that a while ago and it worked. But then Tesla keeps sending out over-the-air updates so that you can't use it with your Tesla. So you to use the one that they're making. And right. EVgo actually banned it. They have a way to identify the unit when it's plugged in, and you can't use it on the EVgo network either. But one of the biggest problems is you can unplug it hot. When you're DC fast charging with 400 volts, you don't want an adapter to be able to be unplugged before it, you know, officially shuts off. Now, if it works properly, it should cut the power the second or millisecond that you start the unplugging process, but it doesn't have the safety devices built into it that Tesla or EVgo wants. So they don't let you use it on their network.
All right. Hey, so let's kick it off with talking about what we've been driving this week. So Lacey, welcome back to the podcast. I understand that you spent a good amount of time recently driving a very fast Lucid Air, very slowly.
Exactly.
As part of a record setting event. And you also got to try out the Rivian R1T as part of this. So was this your first time driving the Lucid Air? And I believe it was the first time you were in the Rivian, right?
Yeah, it was for both. So that was a really exciting week. So my buddy, if you guys know a little background on me, I did an EV rally with the Kilowatts, Ryan, and that was a televised event on NBC Sports back this past fall, and we haven't really done anything together since then. So he called me up a couple months back and was like, hey, I'm toying with this idea. I'm talking to Lucid to see if I can get a car to try and set a world record for the longest travel on a single charge in an EV, a production EV, and on public roads. So that was the interesting thing about it. And I said, you know what, that sounds pretty fun. I haven't been in a Lucid like to drive one yet, and so yeah, why not give it a go? And so he brought together a team of people. I think there were about seven of us, and what we did was eventually we got a route situated. Unfortunately, the one that we wanted to use initially before we got there didn't work out because it wasn't maintained. It was very gravelly, and that's like the last thing you want when you're trying to try to be efficient, is any kind of uneven surface. Ultimately, we ended up finding a route that was like a 14-mile stretch of road, and there were two turnaround points. So each person would spend 3 hours in the car at a time and just going 27 miles per hour.
That sounds painful.
Yeah, eke out as much range as possible. And, you know, we had the HVAC turned off. We had, you know, when it was safe to do so, we had the headlamps turned off so that there were only daytime running lamps. We had a little Jackery box right next to us in the passenger seat that we plugged in like a fan so that we could keep cool. We put a big shield over the glass roof because it doesn't have like a shade that in the production vehicle, just to have a shade to block out the sun, because the UV protectant does a pretty good job of it already. But we wanted to make sure if we're going to have the HVAC off, we can't have any additional heat in there or we'll die. So we have this little like powered fan that was plugged into the Jackery and kept that clipped right on the dashboard to keep us cool. But, you know, there were a couple things that we could do to improve. We did hit 687.4 miles. So it is the longest in a production car on public streets that in that situation. We really wanted to hit like closer to like 800. But the car actually, for one, we charge it to 99%, not 100%. So there was that. So because we didn't have enough time between, since we had to change the route last minute. So it was at 99%, which isn't a big difference, but it is when you're trying to set something like this. Right. And then it also, the car stopped at 2%, so there was a 3% difference that we could have attempted to squeak out that we couldn't. And then, you know, we had a really high winds one day, so that ate up a little bit of our range. And also, I think we should have started earlier in the morning and hit, because we were driving for like 30 some odd hours.
Jeez.
So we went through the night, but we went through the night twice, and we should have only gone through it once. So if we would have started in the morning without all those cold temperatures eating away, because we couldn't control turning the battery heater on. So it would have been better if we could do daytime and minimize that time at night where it was really cold.
And also, Lacey, you said it was only 14 miles.
Yes.
So doing all those turns is not good for range.
Exactly.
I mean,
exactly.
I'm shocked to hear that.
So we would turn it into neutral and then coast and do our turn. But even, you know, those losses, that's not, that was the best route that we could find last minute. So like I said, if we had more like a for sure thing, or like we did it on a track, or even like if we did it again and we did it in a controlled area where we know there's not going to be anyone for that amount of time, that's just like a constant loop that we could continuously go through without turning around or anything like that, then I think we'd be in really good shape. But like initially when Ryan was talking about it, he's like, it would be great if we could get to 1,000. And I was like, that's definitely going to be a challenge.
That's a goal.
Yeah, that is a goal. You know,
it'd be like 8.6 miles per kilowatt hour. Like that's, right. You're talking Aptera. You
know? Yeah. Yeah. And so the thing about that was, I think the world record was 999 for Guinness World Record.
Okay.
For that attempt. But it was in, I don't even remember what it was in, but it was a prototype of some sort and it was on a controlled track.
Right.
So very different from what we attempted. But another thing about the car was that the car was reading a maximum of 6.4 miles per kilowatt hour. So it was interesting for us because we knew that in some scenarios we were achieving better than that, but that's just where the computer would stop reading.
Yeah, because nobody's going to ever see that unless they're driving downhill. You know?
Yeah, and so. It's like, and they probably don't want, they probably put a cap on it because they don't want people to think that they're going to be able to achieve that consistently too. Like, I don't know, marketing wise or like information wise, it's like, even though it's not deceiving, it could give off the wrong idea of your potential range. So
yeah.
I don't know.
So but, learning fast asks, was 27 miles per hour truly the most efficient speed?
So yes, according to Lucid. So we had talked to them ahead of time and their engineering team, and they said, you know, that was the sweet spot, was to go a consistent 27 miles per hour based on that particular powertrain. But yeah, I mean, every car is going to be a little bit different. So,
right. Anthony C says, Ryan Kilowatts said that maybe using a Hummer EV with 200 kilowatt hours at slow speeds would be better next time. Well, maybe. I don't know. That's a huge battery, but yeah. It's also a huge vehicle.
Yeah, I don't know about that. 9,000 plus pounds in maybe at slow speeds.
Maybe the Silverado EV when it has that same 200 kilowatt hour battery.
So, we definitely wouldn't have to slow down because we'd just be able to go over everyone if we wanted to keep going. So there's that.
So you went 687 miles at 27 miles an hour, more or less. So Tom, you did a 70 mile an hour range test in Lucid Air. So what, and that's really for distance, that's really like a metric that, like, I think it means most people who are traveling, but
right at highway speeds.
So what did you get?
So I finished up with exactly 500 miles, but
right,
I pulled off of the highway at driving 70 miles an hour at 496. And I pulled into the parking lot where the DC fast charger was, and it still had some go in it. So then I circled the parking lot at lower speeds, probably about 40 miles an hour, for four more miles to hit 500. So, you know, I always like to make that clear. I drove 496 miles at 70 miles an hour.
Right.
The battery wasn't dead. If I would have continued, I couldn't have made the next exit to right. turn around and get back, and I would have been stuck on the side of the road. So, you know, but then again, it was still moving at 500 miles. So, it's possible I could have gotten 498 or maybe 400, maybe even 500 at 70 miles an hour if I didn't have to worry about plugging in. But yeah, and I averaged 4.3 miles per kilowatt hour, which is really amazing for such a big, powerful car with a, you know, 118 kilowatt hour battery pack. To me, that was just an amazing accomplishment. And so is this what they did with this low speed range test. It's, you know, it's the Lucid Air is an incredibly efficient vehicle. And I agree with Lacey. They could have done better if they had a better track, if they charge it to 100%, if it didn't shut off at 2%, that's weird. That didn't happen for me at all. You know, I went beyond zero. You know, I probably drove it. I think when I pulled off the highway, it might've been at 1% when it was at 496 or zero, I forget. And did those last 4 miles with it. You know, still under its power, and I averaged 4.6 miles. per kilowatt hour. So 4.3. So Lisa, you're saying for the whole, what did it average for the whole trip? Did you pin the
it kept reading the max? Like, all the way to the end, it was just reading 6.4. But, you know, the first night, so we started, I think, at 8:30. I was the first driver. And since it was so late, and in order to get the car to the location where we were doing our loop, we had to go on the highway. And the highway had a really huge shoulder wide enough for the car. But for safety reasons, we had an extra person in the car. So since it was late at night, and during that stretch, we also had the Rivian following us behind us, Zach, who is at Black Model 3 on Twitter. I'm sure a lot of you guys have seen his stuff pop up on your Twitter.
Yeah, I saw you there. He was there with you guys.
He was there with us, and he actually followed us in the Rivian for the first stretch there. And then we switched drivers. So Tim, my producer, he was the second driver. So we went on the first stretch. I drove off on the highway and then got to the location. Then we switched drivers, and then he did his stretch for 3 hours, which safety-wise was, like, looking back, so crucial, because we're driving in the middle of the night. And so not only that, on the side of the road of the highway, but also we were so tired because we had been route planning all day. And so I think it was just really important for that. But if you were in a controlled scenario where the person could sleep during the day ahead of time and then do their shift without being tired or anything, like, it would have been fine. But
so, and you finished up with how many miles? Was it 687?
687.4, yep.
So divide that by 118.
180. Usable. Oh.
Yeah, so you averaged, it should have averaged 5.82 miles per kilowatt hour.
Which is pretty good. But
it's ridiculous.
There was just a lot of things that we could have done to improve the situation. Mm-hmm. Where I think, you know, it is possible to do, obviously, at least 700. But, you know,
I think 750. If you had a 100-mile straight loop on a road, like, which is kind of what I do when I do my range tests, it's 100 miles turnaround, 100 miles. Because those turnarounds affect you. They definitely rob you. And with a 14 mile, I mean, do the math. How many times did you guys turn around?
I know, too many.
hundreds of times. Yeah. So that absolutely robbed you. Maybe 50 miles.
We considered doing the highway thing because that stretch of road was really, the highway was just like, you could go forever. It's like right by the Bonneville Salt Flats, if you guys know that area. That highway just goes straight to Salt Lake City and then all the way, like, it goes like forever, it seems, west. So, that was the highway we went was towards Salt Lake City, and then our loop was kind of like an in-between where we were staying and Salt Lake, but that was the longest stretch that we could find that had the minimal amount of turnarounds, unfortunately. And even on the highway, like, we were all like, not everyone felt comfortable doing it because it was an 80 mile per hour highway too, so it was higher.
It's not safe.
It was fast. Yeah. It wasn't safe. So
you turned around 49 times, not my hundreds. I guess I'm not good at free doing math without using a calculator, but still,
times.
That's you know, 50 times making that turn, that definitely affects your
absolutely.
Because I watch when I do the range tests, I watch, you know, it hurt my miles per kilowatt hour every time I get off the highway and loop around and turn back up.
Yep.
Anyway, guys, I got to punch out for a minute. I'll be right back. Somebody's ringing my doorbell.
Right. What else did you think about the Lucid? Did you drive it at faster speeds, like in more dynamic conditions?
No. I know. It's like, I wish I had time to. Initially we had broken off into two teams, and I went with Ryan and Zach and Jordan in the Rivian to scout one location, and then the other team, Josh, the other Ryan, and Tim, my producer, went in the Lucid, and they had a little fun in the Lucid. They got to experience it at higher speeds and stuff like that before we had fully charged it for the test. But Tim was basically saying, like, it's very fast. Like, it is.
It's a rocket ship.
The powertrain is amazing in that car. So they've done a really great job with it.
Right. But so driving at slow speed, could you get any kind of impression? Like, what do you think of it?
I mean, I was impressed with how the modulation of the pedal was really good at slow speeds, because it was trying to just slowly eke into it so that I didn't use too much energy. So I did like that pedal feel, not only from the perspective of the, you know, accelerator, but also from the braking. I will say I wish that the seats were more comfortable. I was sitting in there for 3 hours, and after about an hour and a half, the interior is very pretty, but the seats for long periods of time weren't that comfortable to me in particular. But yeah, that was just one thing that I noticed, because I was sitting there for so long, at 27 miles per hour. So it's like,
I guess you couldn't turn on the massagers or anything.
No, we didn't, because we just didn't want to use any kind of auxiliary anything.
Right.
We had everything. Like, I would plug my phone into the Jackery box next to me, and, you know, some people listen to podcasts and stuff like that while they were on their stretch. But
I was listening to Martin's podcast when I did the range test. I was in the car 8 hours straight. You know, I don't know which one's worse. The
Air is
such a great driving car. It was so hard to just drive at 70 miles an hour, you know, and a couple of times during the test, actually one time for sure, I had a guy pull up the Tesla Model S, and he like wanted to race me. He was pulling next to me and like taking off and accelerating. And I'm like, I wish I could just have a little fun here. You know, not that I advocate for racing on public highways, but for a quick burst, you know, for you know, a second or two, you could have a little fun as long as there's not a lot of cars on the road. But I can't imagine driving 25 miles an hour in that car. Like, that must be torture. Right.
It was torturous.
So the Rivian R1T, did you get to drive that quickly?
I did. Or
normal
yes.
speeds, at least.
Where the location was for our loop was about an hour and 15 minutes away from where we were staying the first night, and then we changed and got a hotel that was closer. So I was able to drive the R1T to go do my next shift. So initially I was one of, I think, two people that did two shifts. So, and the Rivian was kind of like our runaround car, so we could use it for whatever. And Ryan has a Turo business. Vehicle. And so, that's his vehicle that he bought specifically for his Turo. So he let us use it for this run, which was great. And because it was the first time that I had ever, got to drive it, and oh gosh, it just confirmed. Yes, I am so excited to get that car. I have a pre-order on one, and I really cannot wait to get it now. But I will say there are a couple of things that I think will probably be modified or upgraded in the meantime until I get my car, and I'm hoping that's the case. Nothing like huge or anything like that, but I'm really hoping that I hit the sweet spot, because I'm waiting for the Max Pack, which is the 400 plus mile range version.
That's right.
And I know a lot of people are like, well, most, you know, the 314 or whatever it is sufficient for most people. And it is, but for the road trips that I do and the stuff that I do, I really like need to have a little bit more range. And this kind of actually was another like confirmation of that, because like I said, it was an hour and a half to get to that location, and where we were staying, there weren't many, high speed like Electrify America or CCS network chargers. So every time we would go out, someone would drive that car out there and then switch to do their rotation. The person that was just driving in the Lucid would hop in the Rivian and then drive back to the house. And on the way back, they had to charge, because the next person that would leave for the next shift needed to have as close to a full charge as possible, like, up to about 80%. Which is about where it's worth. I just saw your video, Tom, and it resonated so well, because I was like, that's exactly the experience. It's like hitting it right when you get up to about 80% or, you know, 90%. It's not worth staying anymore, because it just takes so long to finish the charge.
Yeah. Most EVs are like that. You know, some of them do a little bit better above 80 or 90%, you really don't want to hang out unless you need to. But here's an instance, and I always say that, sometimes you need to. So that's why Kyle and I do the full 0 to 100% to let everybody know what to expect. And you know, in my video, which we're probably going to talk about in a little bit, I broke it into thirds. It took an hour and 35 minutes for the complete 0 to 100. So I broke it into three, like, 32-minute sections. And in the first third, you got 60% of the battery. In the second third, you got about 30% of the battery. So you got 90% of the battery the first two thirds. And then in the final third, you got 10% of the battery. So it's like 60%, 10%. You know, where do you really want to be there for that same amount of period? You get six times the amount of energy pumped into the pack, but there's instances where you need to. And that's why we like to map out the whole 0 to 100 so people can see, you know, but every now and then, not every now and then, frequently, believe it or not, Lacey, Kyle and I get comments, even people send us tweets like, you're doing a disservice to the EV industry by charging it from 0 to 100% because you're giving people the impression it takes an hour and a half to recharge the vehicle. I get their point, but we verbalize and say, look, we're just mapping this thing out that you will not be here for an hour and a half charging your Rivian. You know, almost never. First of all, you're never going to plug in at zero. And on the few times you plug in really low, you're not going to charge to 100. So any event, we like to point that out, that we try to map the whole thing out so people can see the whole curve, but you really won't be doing that often. And another problem that I have is I'm a little spoiled here on the East Coast. There's a lot of DC fast chargers up and down the coast. You know, Electrify America has a great network here. EVgo is starting to get some high-speed chargers installed. So I forget sometimes, like what you just mentioned, and saying, look, where we were, there wasn't a lot of DC fast chargers. I have to remind myself that depending where you are in the country, that's the case, because where I am here, they're everywhere. I can go wherever I want, and it's a very easy pull over, plug in, stay for half an hour, move on to the next one. But I have to constantly remind myself that, you know, there's areas of the country that's underserved with DC fast charging. And I'm glad that you remind me of that. I've got a thick head. I forget things often.
On the coast, it's great. There's tons of coverage, it seems. But right in the middle of the country, there's not as much.
Right.
And it's not to say you can't go across the country. I mean, we've proven it. You guys have proven it. There's so many road trip videos online. Even Maki Vlog just said, like, they've done a ton of road trip videos, too. But, you know, when you get in that situation, when you're in that area and you need to get around town, even when you get to your destination, you need to get around town, like, it is helpful. And, you know, at our Airbnb, we didn't have a charger there. So that would be another thing that I think would be super helpful if for overnight stuff.
Well, I just was in Italy for a week. I just got back late last night. Somebody asked early on, said I thought Tom was on vacation. I was until like 10 o'clock last night. But I was able to get a Skoda Enyaq for the trip. And I drove it all around Italy, which is basically the Skoda's version of the ID4, you know, Volkswagen Group owned Skoda, and they make the Skoda Enyaq, and it's like a nicer ID4. The inside is a little bit more upscale. I really enjoyed it. And the cool thing, Lacey, was that the villa that we rented, I could just plug it into the regular household outlet and charge it. So I only really had to use the NL charging network once when I first arrived, because I drove from Rome to our villa and the battery was like nearly dead and I wanted to quickly get it up to 100. And then I just charged it overnight and it worked fantastically. So that you have to, I now, when I go away, if I'm going to have an electric car, I make sure I can charge where I am. I can plug in at wherever I rent. And then it just makes the trip so much easier.
I completely agree. That's how I usually base all my road trips too. I don't know if they're, because I didn't book the Airbnb or whatever. I would assume in that area it's probably not very popular to have and to be able to fit as many people as we do. I mean, there were seven of us in that house, so there was a lot of us. But so I'm assuming that the options were extremely slim and he couldn't find something that had that kind of capability. But for what we needed,
here's the Skoda that I had, Dom.
I was impressed even with just the ID4's interior. I thought it was very premium considering that.
But the Skoda seemed to me like a step above the ID4. It was really nice.
So Tom, let me do your thing here. So like, as you're saying, you were on vacation for the past week in Italy and you got this. This is the kissing cousin of the VW ID4. It's the Skoda Enyaq IV, I guess you say it. And we're watching on the screen here now since you're talking about it.
And that's me plugged in.
Okay.
At my villa.
See if I can.
You can see the plug.
Oh, yeah.
That is so cool.
Yeah, it was so cool.
That great, place great, looks great awesome. Home. All the stone and
it was unbelievable. I went with a bunch of friends. I went with like five other couples, and we rented this giant villa on the mountain side in Tuscany. And it was like we each all had our own bedrooms and bathrooms and kitchens. And it was just like mountainside villa. It was so cool. And I was able to just plug in there. Yeah, that's it. If you notice, there's a proper driver's display on that, as opposed to the ID4 that has like the on top of the driver's column, the small display, which is kind of like the BMW i3, a little screen that just sits on top of the driver's column.
Or the bolt height.
Yeah, that has an actual, it's very small, but it's built into the dashboard like a regular driver's display. But I mean, I thought it was fantastic. I was really impressed with it, and it served my purposes, you know, really well.
Oh, I'm so jealous of all the cool EVs I have over there.
Yeah,
over there and in China, it's like,
That's right.
I wanted to drive a Twizy. I saw so many people with the Twizzies, and really? I was waiting for the opportunity where someone was like standing aside of it or whatever. And I was going to literally ask him, do you mind if I take this for a short drive? Sure. They would be like, hell no. Like, who are you? You know, coming to ask me to drive my car. But I never got the opportunity to even ask anybody to take it for a drive.
So I wonder, so that's interesting that you say it's like nicer than the IV. Cause I always think of Skoda as the like more like a economy brand for Volkswagen, but you say it's nicer.
Take a look at the video, you know, all leather, the nice, dash. You know, I mean, I thought it was, it was more upscale than the ID4s that I've driven here.
Okay. Right. Right. It seems like a more mature design as well. Right. Mm-hmm. On the inside. Yeah. I'm not sure if I like the exterior design as much as the ID4, but
really, I love the front.
Oh, really? Really?
You didn't like that?
That's the part I don't like. Yeah.
Really? Okay. Well,
I don't know.
You know,
I have bad taste. What can I say?
No, we all have different tastes. And speaking of taste, when I saw there were comments when I came back about the seats. Lacey, did you make a comment about the seats? You liked them, you didn't like them?
In the ID4?
No, in the Lucid.
Oh, in the Lucid.
Yeah, because when I came back,
I like their styling of the materials and everything like that. But sitting in the seat for like 3 hours, they weren't like after like an hour, hour and a half. It was uncomfortable for me. Like my butt started getting sore, which, you know, I just got a new Tesla Model Y a couple months ago, and the seats are so comfortable. I can literally go on a road trip for like 5-6 hours and not like be worried about, and like stopping to charge. I'm like, I don't need to get up because my butt doesn't hurt. You know, that's how comfortable they are.
Wow. That's
well, great. I have a Model 3 and it's the same seats and I feel the same way. They're super comfortable. But what I will say is, you know, in my experience with the Lucid, I thought they were fine, and I have a bad back. So there's a lot of cars that I drive EVs on road tests where, you know, my back hurts when I got off it, but with the Lucid, I did 8 hours straight and I was fine. And the thing about that is, and I've come to, you know, I've reviewed so many cars over the last 10 years, and I read other people's reviews, and so often I have, like, we have diametrically opposed opinions on the seats. So the one thing that I'd like to point out for all the followers is, don't necessarily listen to what I'm saying or what Lacey's saying. You know, you drive it, because everybody has different, like, there's no one way to quantify how comfortable a seat is. We all have different bodies and different proportions. So, you know, I drove it for 8 hours. My butt was fine. You know, Lacey drove it 3 hours, stopped, drove it again. She had difficulty. Everyone has different bodies. We all have different needs. So the one thing that, you know, I mean, it's kind of like styling. You know, I could say I love the front end of the Enyaq. Dom doesn't like it. Neither one of us is right. And it's the same thing with the seats. Don't put too much stock in what you read about seat comfort. You drive it, and that really dictates, you know, what works for you.
Agreed.
Hey, so, Lacey, I think also I understand that next week you're going to be spending some time with a Nissan Ariya. So what can you tell us about that? Just curious what's going on.
Like a few weeks back, I actually went to headquarters for Nissan and got certified on the new Leaf, and the dealer training program went on where I wasn't fully on board on that because I had other things going on, but I was a backup for. So I got certified for Leaf, and then this upcoming program that I'm going to be working on internally for Nissan is to help train their dealers on the Ariya. Okay. So I'm going next week to our initial like deep dive immersion of everything Ariya, and we'll be taking like a road show specifically for dealers to come and get educated, and them to invite some of their like pre-order holders on some of the other days to these locations. So it's I'm going to be helping with the education side for the Ariya launch. And so I'm so excited. And when we were at the Leaf certification, we were able to see the US spec version for a little bit, but we didn't get to drive it yet. But I'm going to be able to drive it. I'm so excited. just next week. So this is a pretty long program. I'm specifically in the central region where we'll be going to different cities to get everybody on board. So
you're going to be a certified Ariya expert then.
That's right.
That's what you're saying. So when you do like an Ariya video, everyone needs to go watch that because
I'm going to know everything. Yeah.
You're going to know it all. Oh, by the way, I should mention, yeah, if you haven't subscribed to Misco Electric's YouTube channel, you should do that. Hit that with the bell icon for notifications. So
yes.
So and recently you've been doing a lot of electric bicycle reviews.
Yes. So the basis of my channel, Misco Electric, is that maybe a car isn't right for you, but other mobility solutions are. So all e-mobility I like to cover, whether it's, you know, recreation like electric surfboards or electric boats, or even, you know,
man, I need to try an electric surfboard. That's like, oh.
I know, like so I live fun. Very close to a lake, so I'm like, I need to get these people to this summer to send me some stuff to test out. But yeah, so I also do scooters and electric bicycles. So I just had a couple bikes sent to me. I just launched my KBO Breeze step through review, and then I have an Aventon Adventure and an Aventon Cinch, which are both really awesome step-through bikes, but one specifically is a folding bike, which is cool because I like to take all my bikes with me, and I do have a bike rack now for my car that I can take multiple with me. But, you know, when you're doing that on road trips, it does kill your range. So to be able to put it, fold it up and put it in my car is going to be pretty awesome. So I'm excited for that. But yeah, I've been doing some e-bike reviews as well lately, and I got a car one coming out today that's going to be pretty interesting.
Oh, really? Can you give us some hints?
Yeah, so back a couple months ago, I went to the New York Auto Show, and there was this company that launched an EV hypercar, specifically a prototype there to show off, and it was called the Deus Vian. And it's this Austrian-based company who's partnering with Attal Designs and Williams Advanced Engineering to bring EV hypercar. And, you know, there are a lot of these new companies that are attempting to bring something to market. But what's interesting here is that, you know, Attal Designs and Williams Advanced Engineering formed a partnership last year, I think it was, where they're creating modular architecture for EVs to be able to sell, make anywhere from, you know, very extremely limited volume to up to 10,000 units a year for, you know, whatever project, whether, you know, whatever OEM or whoever wants to work with them. So this company is seemingly one of the first to take advantage of this type of partnership. And what's also interesting is that Attal Design, which I didn't know this until I did a little bit of research, they designed their original 1984 DeLorean, and they're actually working on the new DeLorean. Right. So that's kind of an interesting story as well. But yeah, two powerhouse partners that, you know, it's extremely limited volume and very, and who knows if it will get to, you know, production if the money's there, but kind of an interesting.
If Attal Design did the exterior design, then, you know, it looks good. They did the, you know VinFast, the car maker, right, from Vietnam. They also make buses. They have a company called VinBus, and Attal Design did the bus design for them, and they're very nice.
Interesting.
Very awesome.
They've had some really amazing legendary icons under their belt, so.
Right.
Dom, let me grab a couple of questions we have.
Oh, sure.
Somebody asked, or actually, Mac Mike asked Tom, how was the ARC boat in Texas? So obviously I didn't get to drive it. And I didn't even tow that one. I took the Airstream. So I mean, it looked really cool.
But was that the F-150 Lightning?
Yeah. Ford had an ARC boat there on one of the, they had a boat to tow, a horse trailer, some, a bunch of different trailers, the Airstream, and I selected the Airstream to drive. So, looked really cool. I'd love to take it for, out on a lake one day, but, that's all I can really talk about that. And then Doug Thompson right after that said, Tom, BMW IFA range test next week, right? So when I came home yesterday, this was waiting in my driveway.
So
yeah, the range test, DC fast charging, all that stuff is coming up. I don't know if I'm going to have the video out next week. It might take 2 weeks because I'm actually doing another first drive event next week in the Netherlands. So I'm going to be gone all week.
Can you talk about what that is?
Not really. Okay. And, I won't be able to edit and shoot. I'll probably shoot the range test and the charging this weekend for the i4, but I won't be able to edit the video until I get back in a week and a half. So that's coming. And then I'm getting the iX as soon when they come to pick up the i4, they're dropping off an iX. M60. So I'm going to have all that range test and charging and everything coming up in the next couple of weeks. So we got a couple of cool things coming up here on Inside EVs and also on my YouTube channel. The range tests will be on Inside EVs. The charging stuff will be on State of Charge. And talking about the range tests, I had a Rivian R1T a week and a half ago, and I did the DC fast charging, which is already up on my channel and on Inside EVs. And the 70 mile an hour highway range test is going to be up on the Inside EVs YouTube channel at 9 a.m. this Sunday. So, we'll won't really talk about the results, but what I can tell you is if you watch my charging video, you'll know the results because I have a screenshot that I thought the 70 mile an hour highway range test video was going to get put out first, but okay. Inside EVs wanted me to hold it back for a week. And so you can see the results if you watch the charging video. It didn't do as well as I thought it would, but what I will say is it wasn't great conditions. It was a very windy day and it was colder than usual. Was actually the worst wind I've ever had on a range test. And with a big boxy truck, I'm sure it robbed me. Nope.
Oh, I cannot see that.
And, with a big boxy truck, it definitely robbed me of probably 20 or 30 miles. So, I'm going to probably redo the R1T range test over the summer at some point, because when I get my Lightning, I'm going to do a lot of comparison videos. I have a good friend of mine that has an R1T already. And once I get my Lightning, I'm going to do side-by-side charging, range tests, towing comparisons, all that stuff. So that's coming up soon. But this is what you're taking a look now is the DC fast charging recording and analysis that we did. I charged from 0 to 100%. I mentioned a little earlier, it took an hour and 35 minutes, but the real number that you want to look at is, let's say, 15 to 80%, and that took 40 minutes. Now, I compared it to the Lightning, which Ford promises 41 minutes from 15% to 80%. So I compared my 15% to 80% section with the Lightnings. However, that was not completely fair, because as you could see from the screen here that Dom just keeps enlarging, I'm sure he doesn't mean to, what you do is when you first plug in, I pulled up to 207 kilowatts. So Kyle did the DC fast charge recording on an R1T a few weeks ago. He didn't get the vehicle to hit 200 kilowatts. It did for me on the Electrify America charging station. I pulled up to 207 kilowatts. You see that, leave it on that for a minute, Dom.
Sure.
You see the first 22%, it's up over 200 kilowatts before it powers down. Now, the reason why it wasn't completely fair that I compared 15 to 80% with the Lightning is because by the time we got to 15%, it was already, I had already taken in a lot of power, and it ramps down, it thermal limits at 22%. So if I would have plugged in at 15%, I would have got that 200 kilowatt before thermally limited deeper into the charging session. But I did the math on that because I plugged it in on a few occasions. I did another charging session where I plugged it in for 15% and it thermally limited after 10 minutes, just like it did here. So basically I cheated Rivian out of 2 minutes. In my video, it says that it would have taken 40 minutes to go from 15% to 80%. It actually would have taken 38 minutes. Whereas the F-150 Lightning takes 41 minutes. So it's a little quicker, the Rivian, but the Rivian has a smaller battery pack. So it's nearly the same. Now, Rivian can improve this and keep the vehicle from thermally limiting, because as Kyle mentioned in his video, the theoretical charging curve will be much better on the Rivian. It'll hold that 200 kilowatt much longer. But as it's right now, and this was a cool day, it wasn't a hot day, it thermally limits after about 10 minutes of charging. Whether you plug it in at 0% or 15%, you get that 200 kilowatts for about 10 minutes, and then it drops down to 170 kilowatts. I noticed that on the different charging sessions that I did. And here is where I compared it to the R1T and the F-150 Lightning. Now, the F-150 Lightning is a theoretical charging curve because I wasn't able to record 0 to 100%. This is on the data that Ford gave me, how it would charge. So the charging curve might be a little different, but the time is still the same. It's still 41 minutes from 15% to 80%. And I'll be able to prove that or get the real charging curve really soon. My F-150 Lightning's been in production for a week now. So nice. I should be getting it maybe in 2 weeks or so, 2 to 3 weeks. They started deliveries yesterday. We've seen that. Ford announced that the F-150 Lightning deliveries have begun. So they're being shipped to dealers. My vehicle's in production. It should be shipped pretty soon. And then we're going to get a ton of content on charging and range tests and towing with the Lightning.
I'm going to have to come up and visit.
Of course.
Yeah. So I like this F-150 chart, this charging curve graph that we have up on the screen now. Mm-hmm. So this is one that you say Ford gave you.
So Ford at the F-150 Lightning drive showed Kyle and I, and they said we were the only two people out of the 130 people that were there. They showed us the charging curve, but it wasn't displayed like it was here. It was over time. So it stretched out. So I asked them if they could send it to me so I could then interpret it onto a proper 0 to 100% power charging curve, which was my interpretation of what they sent me. I think it's very close to what we're going to see, but we'll see once we get it. But the time was really what was most important.
Right.
15% to 80% in 41 minutes, as you could see there. And in my charging session, it took 40 minutes for the Rivian.
Right. All right. Yeah, that looks pretty cool. And like you say, you'll have an official actually
as soon as I get
wild actual charging curve of what it does.
Yeah. And what I really plan on doing too is getting my friend's R1T and my Lightning and plugging them in to an Electrify America station that has 2 350 kilowatt DC fast chargers at the same time and recording them side by side and doing like a drag race on charging, with some play-by-play action. So I should be able to do that within a couple of weeks. And awesome. I think that'll be fun.
That'd be awesome.
One other thing I want to mention, Dom, I don't know if you can pull that back up, but the interesting thing was so many people were ragging on the F-150 Lightning's inability to charge at a high rate because Ford has about 150 kilowatt DC fast charge rate. Now we're learning it's going to be a little higher. It's going to be around 160, but they've said it was 150. So people said, oh, it's going to charge so slow. The Rivian has such an advantage. It can charge at 200 kilowatt. Yet in reality, the charging curve has as much to do with how fast the vehicle charges as its peak charging rate. You know, Rivian can improve that. They can keep the vehicle from thermally limiting after only 10 minutes of charging. And then it'll open up the gap between the charging. But take a look here. You're talking about a vehicle that can take in over 200 kilowatts and one that can take in about 150 to 160. And the charging time is virtually identical within a couple of minutes of each other.
Right.
Charging curve is really what's super important, not just your maximum charging rate. It's great when companies put out these, oh, it can charge at 200 kilowatts. It can, but you know, reality, if it holds it for 3 minutes, you know, even the Teslas, and Teslas are fantastic charging electric vehicles. But people talk about, oh, it can take in 200 kilowatts. Yeah, it does it for like 9 minutes. And that it's still a great charging EV, but there's a lot of other EVs that charge better at higher states of charge than Teslas do.
Okay. So we lost Kyle, but if he was here, we'd be talking about just about what he's been doing. So yeah, he's on a trip to Alaska, and you can follow his journey on the Out of Spec Overlanding channel. I just wanted to throw that little thing out there so you can keep up with him. And next week, I'm pretty sure he's going to be on with us, thanks to a piece of equipment that's associated with an electric vehicle company. So I don't know if I can spill the beans about that yet, but next week it could be kind of a very interesting episode. So yeah, that's that. So all right, so there were like no big
mute. Yeah, thanks Lacey. So really quick, John asked Tom, doesn't temperature outside reflect charge? It absolutely affects it, but the thermal management system, that's what the thermal management system on the vehicle is for, John. If it's robust enough, it'll keep things cool, or as cool, you know, cool them down enough to maintain higher charging rates. So yes, it absolutely affects it, but the ambient temperature isn't as important as the battery temperature and the components. You know, as those things heat up, you can get them nice and hot even when it's cool out, you know, by charging at a high rate. So it's really how well the thermal management system and what limits the engineers put on temperature for the battery and also the components. It's not just battery temperature, the components. If one of the components heats up, you know, during the charging, it's going to thermally limit the charging. And, you know, I know everybody wants the cars to charge so much faster. But you know, is it charging 5 minutes quicker to 80% worth, you know, battery, you know, capacity loss because of the, you know, you're pushing it and it's being too high. Everybody, you know, is so focused on, you know, getting it down from under 30 minutes to 80%. But if the expense means, you know, 3 or 4 years from now, you've got 10 less kilowatt hour of battery in your pack, wasn't the extra 5 minutes wait worth it? So, you know, it's a balance. And I think that's what the engineers are. They're playing the long game. They don't want to see these vehicles back in on warranty. If somebody does tons of road trips, DC fast charge it all the time, you know, in their opinion, it's better to just, you know, 5 more minutes. We're not talking about an extra half an hour. It really just adds a couple of minutes if you thermally limit it.
Hey, can you guys hear me now?
Mm-hmm. We can hear you.
Okay. Was I on mute or something happened, you said?
No, I was on mute. I started talking and I quickly unmuted myself, and Lacey picked up on that.
Oh, okay. I thought maybe I was muted and no one heard all that whole thing.
No. We heard everything. And Gary asked me, Tom, did you get the dual chillers on your F-150? Yes, I did. They come with the max towing package, which I got.
Oh, okay. The extra towing, is that the extra cooling loop?
Yeah.
Dual chillers?
It's actually a secondary, you know, compressor, you know, a dual chillers.
Ah, okay. I gotcha. Right. So people are telling me that Kyle has talked about his situation publicly. So yeah, he should have Starlink next week. So he'll be like satellite, I guess it's SpaceX more than Tesla, but you know, it's all the same kind of X.com.
Elon umbrella.
Right. Elon umbrella. That's very good. Thank you. All right. So There were no like big debuts for the US this week, but there are a few news items I think that are worth talking about. So let's start with the Cadillac Lyriq, which sold out for the 2023 model year after 4 hours. So that could be as many as 25,000 orders. We're not quite sure the exact number, but that's a pretty good response. You can still join a pre-order list on the Cadillac website, which might get you a spot from a cancellation or at least put you near the front of the line for the 2024 model year. So don't give up hope if you know you really had your mind set on a Cadillac Lyriq. And on top of this, and this has already been the case for a lot of these relatively early electric vehicles. This has been great for Cadillac. So these orders, they included a lot of conquest sales. So that's people who are new to the Cadillac brand. And they say that 70% of the orders came from new customers. And I believe there's a younger demographic as well. So Lacey, first, did you order a Lyric? And second, maybe explain why you think this is or is not a big deal for Cadillac, which I feel has been like suffering from an identity crisis for decades, really.
I think I'm excited to see this. I've seen it in person, but I'm excited to see people have them on the road and driving them, because I actually think it's a pretty compelling option. Like, I'm not the biggest fan of GM. I'm just going to be honest. You know, I have my reasons, but I'm like really impressed with this. And I know that I do think Cadillac needed a kick in the pants, but I also think Buick needs a kick in the pants. Like, there are a lot of, you know, GM product lines that it's like, okay, already, like, do something, you know?
Right.
But I think that the Lyric is actually going to be a pretty, for the price point and for what you get out of it, I think a pretty good option to go for. So I'm excited. I saw one driving. I'm in Michigan, so of course I'm going to see a lot of stuff driving around, especially from the big three that are prototypes and mules and stuff. But I saw one that was not mule, no camo on it or anything like that, driving around in Birmingham. And I just thought the street presence, it looked great. You know, I'm really excited for this SUV to come out.
As am I. I've said this on the podcast before, 100%. And I'm a Tesla owner. I've had two Teslas. If I'm buying that type of vehicle right now, I get the Lyric over the Model Y every day of the week. I'm dead serious. I got a chance to get up close with one. I didn't drive it, so maybe I should reserve that until I drive one. But I spent about an hour with one, and for the price, it's less expensive than a Model Y. And, you know, it's got 300-mile range. It's got the Ultium battery pack, you know, very fast DC fast charging. We haven't seen the full curve yet. I mean, there's still some questions out there. But for the price, it is such a more substantial car. When you sit in it, the materials, the level of sophistication, the quality, it's like, you know, a BMW next to a Honda, quite honestly, you know, when you compare it. So I definitely think people should take a good look at that. And I'm a big Tesla fan. You know I criticize them from time to time, but I think I criticize everybody from time to time. I think that's, you have to. We're not here to be fanboys of any one manufacturer. And you know, I went to the event to check out the Lyric, not expecting to really feel that way about it. I was like, yeah, this is going to be a nice option. But after spending an hour, I'm walking around it, I walked away saying, like, this thing's really a good deal. You know, and I think it might be the kick in the butt, Lacey, that Cadillac needed. You know, can they communicate this to customers? Can the dealerships, you know, really express the value of it? That's going to be a question, because that's a big issue that a lot of the legacy brands are dealing with now, that Tesla doesn't have to deal with, is, you know, can their point of contact, their salespeople, you know, truly communicate how the benefits of this. Now, they're not going to have that problem in the beginning, because they're not going to be able to make too many of them. They're all sold out, I see, for a year or two. But then once that initial batch is delivered and they can ramp up production and they can make, you know, tens of thousands a month of these, will they be able to, you know, sell them at dealerships? And that's still, for all the luxury brands, that's a question right now. And you know that I talk about this on the podcast frequently. I do dealership training. I work with dealers and help them train the sales staff. And you know that these people, they don't hate electric vehicles. It's just different. They don't understand them. And they have to explain more things to customers. Look, these people are just trying to make a commission and move on to the next customer, sell that next car. The salespeople aren't evil salespeople trying to kill electric cars. That's not the case. It's a business. Right. They're just trying to put food on the table. And electric cars pose a problem for them because they get questions that they don't get for their other vehicles about charging and electric and what do I need in my house? They don't have to tell people how to fill up gas. And now you have to learn something new, and there's a learning curve on that. So that's my biggest concern, is can the Cadillac dealerships communicate why somebody should get this over another type of vehicle in their showroom, because at least for the first 4 or 5 years, Lyric's going to be competing with similar cars on the showroom that are gas. And will the sales staff be able to say, this is why you want the Lyric? Maybe this is why you want this, the competing vehicle.
Yep. And time is money. So they don't want to invest necessarily a lot of time in educating themselves about, you know, they need something that's digestible, that's easy for them to learn. And it's great when you are able to go into a dealership, or me going to the dealership. I do very similar to what you do, Tom. But also, it's a frequent that it's a 90-day turnover for sales guys. So it's like,
you know, the dealers don't want to invest in the training because the positions are so transient, you know, like as Lacey said, half the staff is gone 6 months later. So you're spending thousands of dollars in training, and now that guy's working for somebody else. So it's a problem. And, you know, we have to figure this out. And a lot of people just want to abolish the dealership model. I don't know if that's going to be the way we're going to move forward. I think we're going to have some kind of a hybrid system between with dealerships and direct sales that go through the dealership. So, but you know, the legacy, quote unquote, legacy brands have to understand that they need to evolve to make this work. And I think Ford is trying to do that now with this new system that they're setting up. And I think we're going to see that with the other OEMs, you know.
Well, Volkswagen said that they're going to do this Scout brand, and they haven't talked to any of their dealers about it. So are they going to attempt to try to do some kind of direct sales model somehow? Yeah. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. But I agree with you, Tom. I think there's going to be some kind of hybridization where they become almost like the distributor and some maintenance.
Yeah. Obviously. They're going to get a commission on the sale. They have to get a commission on the sale. I mean, NADA is going to, you know, will sue the OEMs if they're not, if they're somehow trying to cut them out of the profit center, which, you know, these dealerships paid for their franchise fees and all that stuff. So you were not going to just see all the OEMs turn into Teslas with direct sales and a truck delivering your car. It's not going to happen in the US. So I know people want that, but you're that's fantasy. We have to have some sort of a middle ground.
Hey, just to swing back to the Cadillac Lyric for a second. So we had a bunch of comments about a lot of our viewers apparently have pre-orders in for the Cadillac Lyric. That's pretty cool. And I just want to mention too, on the Inside EVs forum, we have a Cadillac Lyric subform, and there's been some action there as well. So if you want to share your experience with the Cadillac Lyric, like the whole buying experience and delivery, and then afterwards, you know, join us on the Inside EVs forum, and that'd be great to see you there. So I just want to ask, so Tom, you said the Cadillac Lyric is a great, like, a luxury value. I think it's like $61,000, $62,000 now, $1,000 for the beginning base price. So, but how would you compare it to the BMW iX? Because that's also kind of in that same ballpark, right?
No, the iX is much more expensive.
It's much more expensive, right? But just like, is it that much size? Is the Cadillac kind of like, would it be a good alternative?
I think it would be. I love the iX also. I think the iX is fantastic. You know, I compare the Lyric more to the Model Y, price wise, size wise. The iX is more of a Model X competitor, even though people always remind me that it doesn't have a third row seating. So the Model X has a big advantage with that, but size wise and price wise, the iX is almost exactly in the ballpark of the Model X, whereas the Lyric is a direct competitor to the Y price wise. That's what I'd prefer to compare it to be honest with you.
Size wise, it's close to the iX, though, right? Lyric.
I think it's in between Y and X.
Okay.
I'd have to check, but I don't think it's as big as a Model X.
Right.
It's definitely not as big as a Model X.
You know, like a very long vehicle.
Yeah.
And the iX is around the same size as the Model X.
The iX is a little smaller. I think it's 3 or 4 inches shorter than a Model X. But very similar inside, you know, room and everything. The iX is, you know, they're different vehicles. The Cadillac went for like traditional, like American luxury, like kind of over the top, you know, like, you know, the really, you know, what you would expect. Whereas BMW did like kind of like a minimalistic, futuristic feel in the iX, where it's not over the top. Everything is very nicely laid out. I mean, I personally prefer that type of a style. Even though I love the Lyric interior, it was like too much for me. It was like typical Cadillac, like real, like over the top interior as far as I was concerned. But a lot of people like that. So in that respect, when you sit in it, it just looks so much more substantial than a Model Y or Model X, or even more than the iX. You know, the iX kind of has that futuristic, open, minimalistic feel.
Okay. So it's kind of like I was going to say maybe the experience of the Mercedes EQS SUV, like there's just like a lot of stuff going on, you know?
Yeah, probably more compared to an EQS, you know, although different. It's more like traditional, American luxury, you know, that's modernized.
So Cadillac's supposed to be like an electric only brand, or, you know, that's one of the earliest brands to go all electric for GM. Like I mentioned earlier, they've been having this like an identity crisis, you know, for decades, like since like the 70s, basically, you know. In the 80s, they tried some small cars, and it just seemed to sink the brand to some extent. And then they've been making great cars, like in the 2000s and more recently. But I'm not sure how they've resonated with like the buying public at large. You know, you'll see some people, you know, get it and say, you know, these like Blackwings are like high performance luxury cars. But yeah, I'm just wondering how it's going to establish like a real identity for itself in this electric age, if this is like how the Cadillac Lyric sort of sets it up for that new era for it.
Yeah, I don't have an answer.
Answer. But
yeah, you know, I mean, yeah. I think Cadillac is trying to please their existing customer base.
Sure.
You know, with an electric offering, I think, you know, they didn't go out of their comfort zone too much with the Lyric, but I think they're going to do that as time passes on. I think they wanted their first EV to be like just an electric Cadillac, what everybody would expect when you sit in it. There's nothing that would lead you to think it just wasn't the next Cadillac. You know, they didn't try to, like BMW did that with the iX. They went out of their comfort zone. They kind of made a big i3, you know, they went on that direction. Whereas the i4, which I just got, isn't. That's like a traditional BMW, you know, the dashboard, the seating, the center console. You sit in that and you would just think you're in the next 4 Series Grand Coupe, you know, you know, so there's different trains of thought. I think all the automakers are trying to figure out what the people want. You know, they know everybody loves Tesla. Tesla went super minimalistic on the interior, but they're wondering, do they want that from us, or do they want what we always make just in electric form? So, you know, I think there's going to be this period now where the manufacturers are trying to figure out really what do people want.
Well, I think a lot of them are choosing to go with the crossover route because that is popular in the U.S., so that's at least a safe bet there. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Cadillac is low volume anyway. I mean, you know, the European brands, like the BMWs and the Mercedes, they just crush in that segment. And to compete in the luxury segment like that, you know, there's so many players, Lexus, Cadillac, Lincoln, you know, even I would even say Buick a little bit, even though they're kind of like a mid-range, but Infiniti, like... There's a lot of people in that space, and all those guys are kind of low volume because the Germans just crush them. Like, they're so good at making luxury cars. So they have to do something different, and what that different looks like. I always thought that, you know, that I think a lot of these guys that have been at the bottom for a long time in that segment should have gone electric a long time ago because it's an opportunity to stand out in a different way. Because a lot of them were like rebranding over and over, trying to compete as a performance entry to that. And Lincoln actually a few years ago went and said, you know, we're going to do this quiet luxury thing, and that's going to be our shtick. We're not going to try to compete with Lexus and Cadillac in the sense that we're going with this performance variant, the V or whatever.
Right.
So, AMG. You know, and I think that was a good choice for them, but still, like, the sales, and especially during COVID, is it's hard because production and limited volume inventory has been hurting everyone. But, you know, even so, I think going electric is so crucial for brands like that to be able to survive. Like, there's got to be some kind of consolidation that's going to be happening, and we're going to start seeing like we did back in like the 2000 earlier 2000s, you know, Saturn go away, Pontiac go away, like these brands. I don't see how, if they don't change, how are they going to survive, you know? And they and right. I feel like it's even just getting too late at this point, you know, but at least the big parent companies are making moves in order to invest in the battery factories and stuff that helps. But I feel like they got to get a move on.
Right. But, you know, 70% conquest sales is pretty good. But we've seen that, like mm-hmm. I said, with like a lot of new electric vehicles for different brands. You know, they put out their first EV and all of a sudden they have like a lot of people who wouldn't look at their brand normally looking at, you know, their brand now. And with a Cadillac, it was like 70%, which is a good number. And a younger demographic than what they usually get. I forget what the exact numbers were there. But I mean, that's really what they need. They need younger buyers, basically, and a lot of them, a lot more. Because you mentioned they're a low volume brand, but I don't know if they want to be a low volume brand. Like, no, who wants to be a low volume brand?
They don't. They want to compete with BMW, Mercedes, but they
right,
just
right.
And don't have the sales.
Right, and they maybe they will. With, I mean, 25,000 is nothing to sneeze at, and I don't
electric
know.
Electric Escalade could make a pretty big impact. That'd be sweet. And I mean, they already got a Hummer and a friggin', you know, Silverado right. on the way. So throw that big pack in there.
On their EV day, they've mentioned they're going to build like an Escalade type vehicle, electric vehicle. On their EV day a few years ago, they had one mocked up like it basically kind of looked like an Escalade, you know, but it was electric and it was huge. And yeah, so I think that's definitely one of their going to be happening. And that's one of their people say that's like the best Cadillac right now. I don't know. I haven't driven
that's
it,
what's
but
like bought. So
right. But then people actually say that's people say it's like really, really good. And I think if it's like electric, it would be really, really better. mm-hmm. Yeah. So let's talk about something else. So this next bit of news might not be a big deal for those of us in the U.S., but then again, it just might. So BYD, Build Your Dreams, which started out as a battery company almost 20 years ago, is now the fourth largest EV maker in the world and expects to sell as many as 2 million EVs this year, has just debuted a new sedan called Seal. It seems to be very much a Tesla Model 3 competitor, slightly bigger, and it's built on the BYD platform, e-platform 3.0, which is like it's also the BYD Dolphin hatchback, a smaller car, is also on that same platform. But unlike that car, the Seal has a structural battery pack. So it comes in four different trims with a standard and long-range battery. I should try to pop up a picture of this on the screen while we're talking about it. It's going to take me a minute. So this is why I miss Martin, because he does all the knob twiddling here. And then I can share here and then share, add to the stream. Right. So we can watch. Yeah. This thing looks pretty good. So it comes in four different trims with the standard long range battery options with rear wheel drive. And then it's got an all wheel drive performance trim. It undercuts the Model 3 in China in price, which I believe there the Tesla starts at 42,000 equivalent to US. So this starts at 31,795 US equivalent. So it's a pretty significant price difference. It's slightly larger as well. So standard range on the CLTC cycle, which is probably optimistic, is 342 miles or 550 kilometers, while the long range is said to be good for 435 miles, which is, what is that, 700 kilometers? That's a lot of miles. And I think even if it doesn't, I don't know, what do you think, Tom, in real life, what would that 435 miles CLTC, at least 350?
It's hard. How big did you say the battery was?
We didn't say. Did I don't think they say
I'd
exactly
like to know how big the battery
hours.
Pack is, because that's, I mean, that's what I always go by, you know, and, you know, figure to be conservative, 3 miles a kilowatt hour. And then, you know, that's how I back into what I expect the EPA to be. But I love the styling. I mean, that's definitely this is designed for export. That's not like, you notice a lot of the cars that are just going to be for the Chinese market, They have different styling, you know, and this that's definitely got European styling on it. So, I mean, the headlights look a little Taycan-ish to me, you know, I mean, if that can perform well, if it's built well, if it looks good, and BYD is a big company, they know how to build cars. That's a global car right there. That'll sell, you know, in any market, in Europe, in the US. So
you're kind of answering my question I had for I'll line up for you. So I was going to say, like, the BYDs thing about that's interesting about BYD is they have ambitions to sell in the US because they sell all over the world. They sell in like South American countries and in Europe. They have one, they sell the Tang in Europe, and that only one model at the moment. I wouldn't be surprised to see this join that there. Mm-hmm. And they already manufacture and sell electric buses here in the States. So if you go to the US BYD website and select autos, you'll get the message, new website coming soon. So I was going to ask you, do you think the US is ready for BYD car sales?
Yeah, you know, I've said this before on the podcast. I think where we are now with these Chinese automakers is where we were in 1970, maybe even 67, 66, 67 with the Japanese automakers, where these new companies popping up that were going to start to sell in the US. And most people in the US didn't think that they would want to buy one. I mean, I remember, you know, my dad, when I was a little kid, you know, referring to Japanese cars as toys, you know, it was a joke. It was a little toy, but 15 years later, they were dominating. Nissan, Honda, Toyota was everywhere. And I think that's where we are now with the Chinese automakers. I've been to China multiple times. I've driven the cars. I've seen the facilities. I've talked to engineers. They're on the scale to build world-class cars. It's not, you know, the Chinese cars that were made 10 years ago, which were junk. They really were. And that's why they never sold them globally. They copied other cars. They put together cheap copies and they never really made great cars. But with now this next generation, what a lot of these startups did, NIO, XPeng, BYD, BYD is not really a startup. They've been around a long time. But what they did was many of these companies went and hired top level engineers and managers from the existing OEMs, from the BMWs, the Mercedes, the Volkswagen groups, Toyotas. And they brought them over there and they have improved the whole manufacturing process. So what we're going to see, I think 10 years from now in Europe and the US, Chinese cars are, it's just going to be normal. We're going to see them everywhere. Like what happened with the Japanese cars in the 70s. So they all want to be here. XPeng, NIO, BYD, they all want to have production cars here. The tariffs are a problem now. It's like a 33% tariff. So that makes them really not competitive. Right. I'm not going to speak to whether we should have the tariff or not. That's not really what I'm here to discuss. Right. But it's a simple fact that if we didn't have the tariff, I think XPeng and NIO would already be here.
Right. Mm-hmm. If they really want to come to the US, they really need to come to the US and like build a plant here, basically. Mm-hmm. Like VinFast is planning on doing.
Yep.
Or that our next story, actually, we might as well move to that. I don't know if we want to move. Well, I just want to mention one other thing. So the BYD seal has the LFP battery, and it uses a cell to pack kind of
structural
battery. But it's LFP, but the charging rate is only it's tops out at 150 kilowatts, and it charges from 30% to 80%, which is kind of a weird metric, in 30 minutes. So it'd be under perfect conditions, I would imagine. So I was like, that's not great. Is it, Tom? 30 minutes?
It's not 30 to 80? Great. It's not great. But it's not terrible. I'd like to see what the 15 to 80% is. I mean, they obviously wanted to target 30 minutes, and that's why they did the 30%. They started at the 30, they backed into 30 minutes, you know, it depends on the charging curve. We have to see the charging curve. You know, it might only be 35 minutes from 15% to 80% because at a low state of charge, it's going to be pulling the maximum charge rate. So if that's the case, that's not bad at all. I mean, that's kind of average for what we have these days. If a 30 to 35 minute stop can get you from 10 or 15% to 80%, that's perfectly acceptable these days, because nobody's going to be driving it down to zero. Very few people. People feel very uncomfortable when they get under 15%. Unless you have a huge battery pack like the Lucid Air, like you could, you know, if you've got 120 kilowatt hour, you know, 15% is still a lot of miles to go, you know, but, and if you drive like Lacey just did, you know, 15% is like 100 miles, but, you know, it really depends on how flat that curve is from the 10% to 80%. I'm not bothered by the 150 kilowatt. A lot of people look at that and say, oh, it's on 150 kilowatt. I don't look at that as being bad. If it can pull 150 kilowatt at a low state of charge and hold it for a while, as we believe that Lightning is going to be able to do, then it's fine. You know, it doesn't have to be 200 kilowatt.
What do you think of this BYD situation, Lacey? Someone's saying I didn't give you a chance to talk, definitely making a chance, okay. Making sure you get a chance to weigh in.
I think it's a good looking car, and you know, to Tom's point, yeah, the tariffs are holding these guys back, but now that they've got, you know, this production, the amount of volume that the, you know, the big Chinese and the big ones like NIO, BYD, and XPeng, that they're like just ready to jump on the U.S. market. It's just a matter of hitting the sweet spot of not only like, oh, are we going to be able to get these tariffs eliminated? There is, I saw one of the viewers commented, Benjamin said that there is definitely a different political vibe from a perspective of the consumers, which I get this a lot. When, you know, I go and do a lot of events. I talk to hundreds of thousands of people about cars, and I get their feedback. And I can't tell you how many times I've had people come up to me and say, oh, it's, you know, especially when I was launching the Polestar 2. Oh, it's Chinese. I will never buy anything that's Chinese. So there is that. There is that factor. But if you make a good, compelling car, there is, you know, a group of people that will still buy that. And I think that they are going to be able to do that. I think NIO is going to be probably launching here too, because I've seen a lot of stuff stirring up in the U.S. Just kind of happening in the background. Like, they're hiring more people. They're getting a couple of, like, media personalities are going out there to look and to test the car and stuff like that. So I think they're ramping up to do something here too, but you know, the timing, it's just a matter of, I think, you know, the political,
right.
The tariffs and the political vibe that they're getting right now, they're just waiting for that moment to jump on it.
Yeah. I'm surprised the whole, I don't know if we want to talk about tariffs or politics too much, but when they were first introduced, you know, I think there was a lot of like, you know, noise from like the Democrat side of the political spectrum, you know, talking about how, you know, tariffs are not really helpful to the economy, but now they're in power, they haven't removed them. And it's like, mm-hmm. Well, did you, it's a little frustrating. Like, I don't know. Did you mean what you said mm-hmm. back then, or what's going on? Was mm-hmm. it just politics? You know, anyway, that's the situation.
The truth of the matter is we do, like, China does impose huge tariffs on vehicles we export over there.
Oh, yeah, sure.
So, like I said, I agree with you. I don't want to get into a tariff issue, but it's got to be fair. You know, if our vehicles that are made in the U.S. get hit with a 30 or 40% tariff going over there, then they shouldn't be able to just send them over here either. Now, I know it hurts the consumer. You know, the consumer loses.
I was just going to say, in the case of car, at least the consumer has a lot of different choices besides, so not like stuck with it. Like some products, you know, definitely.
We need fair trade. I don't know exactly what that means. I'm not, you know, in the trade business, mm-hmm. but it has to be fair is all I really want to say. If tariffs is a stick, then you have to use it if you're being treated unfairly.
Right. So the other bit of big news this week is Hyundai. I said that right. Yes. Hyundai, it's just announced a $5.4 billion investment in Bryan County, Georgia, which is just outside the lovely city of Savannah. It will be dedicated to electric vehicles with an annual capacity of 300,000 units. And that's a wide range of models, they say. Commercial production is expected to start in the first half of 2025. So I believe they're breaking ground next year. And yep. So 2025, the first half of the year, cars coming off the line for sale. Hyundai Global COO, Chief Operating Officer Jose Munoz confirmed that up to six models will be produced at the site by 2028. So I think they're going to start possibly with the Hyundai Ioniq 7, and then they could in 2025, and then the next year in 2026 have the Kia EV pickup truck and maybe the Hyundai compact pickup in that year. And they also say that capacity might be expanded to 500,000 per year if things go well by 2028. So that's pretty promising. There will also be a battery factory on the site, which is part of a strategic partnership involving Hyundai and an undisclosed battery maker. But I imagine it's going to be like a Korean battery maker like LG or Samsung SDI, or I don't know, or maybe a little surprises. Yeah. So I don't know if there's a whole lot we can talk about this too much, but I don't know. Lacey, any thoughts?
I mean, I wanted to buy a Hyundai Ioniq 5 before I got my Model Y, and I shopped around. But the problem is it's not sold in Michigan where I live. It is only sold in select states.
Right.
And so I feel like Hyundai is just getting in their own way without, you know, giving. And I know there are constraints, but I'm just like, if they can just produce as many as they can produce, they will sell them. And they need to get them to all the states. So I'm really excited about this news because I want more availability. And for example, the Genesis GV60 is only going to be sold in 4 states to start: California, New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut. Like, I was in that car a couple months ago, and I was just blown away about the interior, the quality. Like, I really loved the GV60, but it breaks my heart that it's only available in 4 states to start. And the Ioniq 5 that I really wanted, every dealer was charging $10,000 over sticker. So I was like, might as well at that price, because I wanted the limited all-wheel drive listed at $56,000. At that price, why not then pay the extra a little bit to get the Model Y? And that's what I ended up doing, because I just, every dealer that I called, I was getting the runaround and they wouldn't let me get it for MSRP. And at that point, I was just like, for the range difference and the other factors, I might as well go for that. But I really wanted that car, and still now I see them driving around on the road and I'm like,
I love the Ioniq 5.
Ioniq 5, right.
I love the styling. In town
yet. I'm like dying to see one, like on the road, like just driving down the street here in Tallahassee.
There's a bunch here. Every time I go to Electrify Market charging stations, there's at least one Ioniq 5. There's some of them like crazy here.
I need to go hang out at the charging stations then. It's just down, that's like just a couple miles down the interstate from me.
I just think this is a big deal, because I think Hyundai is doing some great things with the EV space. And yeah, I want to see more of that.
It's like they built this like great product on this EGMP platform. You know, they got the Kia EV6 and the Ioniq 5 and the GV60 for Genesis. And then they've got this, you know, terrific product that people want and people like. And then they're not making enough of them. I don't know if it's, you know, if they didn't plan to make enough of them, they didn't realize it was like going to be that popular. I don't know what.
I think they're battery constrained. And now with the other challenges of supply chain issues, Dom, and quite honestly, they're prioritizing deliveries to Europe because of the regulations and their what they have to, their average fuel economy. And, you know, they have to send more vehicles there. We kind of get what's left over. Because it's more important for them to send them to Europe, because the regulations are stricter with the fuel economy. So if they can only make X amount of them, you know, 80% or whatever that they're exporting is going to Europe at this point. We see that too with Toyota, you know, with their EVs now. So it's just, we're going to have to live with that until production ramps up.
Yeah. So I'm not sure if we have any other big news this week. I think we heard recently that Faraday Future released their order book numbers or whatever. So last year they had like, I don't know, 10,000 pre-orders or something.
14,000 is what 14,000 was kicked around for a while.
Okay, well, I guess that's not so much now. I mean, Faraday Future, I don't know. There's not a whole lot to say about it. But anyway, it just came out, and you can see this on Inside EVs, that their order book is like 401 pre-orders. Mm-hmm.
It's such a high price point for what it is. It's like, it looks like a minivan. I don't know. To me, it's like, I mean, it's cool. Like, the interior looks awesome.
Yeah, it does. Right. Have you driven in it, Lacey? Point,
No, I haven't.
I've driven in it a couple of times. It's super comfortable and extreme luxury. It's really, to me, more aimed for Chinese market, where, you know, executives want to be in like the most plush, luxurious vehicle that you can have. And it is. But as you said, you know, where's the big market for that here? It's tough to say.
Yeah. I mean, and they've been trying to produce a company and like, not being able to accomplish what their stated goals were. You know, they were supposed to have a factory some time ago. I think they have some sort of facility now, but it's not like we originally saw. There was like a lot of hype at some points, and then they've just had all kinds of issues over the years trying to get this product, this company off the ground. And it's, I don't know.
They've got good people there now. A lot of the executives have been in other companies. You know, it's, you know,
is
but
then. Brightfield over there now? Is he there still?
Okay. Yeah, Carson's still a CEO. But don't forget, there was a good period of time where Lucid was just scuffling. You know, they were running out of funds. They, you know, and it just took that one big investment by the Saudi investment group to put them over the top, and they've been running ever since. So, you know, Faraday, you know, it's they have the vehicle. They're close. It's close to being, you know, completely done, ready for production. But I'm sure it's a money thing. Why they're not pushing forward and moving faster? You know, it's hard to start a car company. I think, you know, people really don't realize how difficult it is, and people are so critical of Rivian and Lucid now because their production numbers are really low in the beginning. They're having difficulty scaling up. It is hard to make a car, and you know, nobody wants to hear that. They expect, okay, production started now, you know, okay, by let me see, 3 months from now they should be up to 10,000 a week, and that's just not how it works. I think Lucid just replaced their manufacturing VP, that you know, with that's an indicator. Well, it could be an indication of a lot of things, but it could be an indication that, you know, they're not happy with how the launch went. Maybe he just wanted to move on to another position, which happens all the time in this industry. So it's hard to read into it until we know exactly what went on. But Lucid clearly isn't happy with the production numbers they're at this point, and I'm sure Rivian isn't either. But Tesla was never happy with their numbers. You know, they weren't, it took them a really long time to scale up. So this is normal for these startups.
Mm-hmm. While we're talking about Lucid, I just want to mention that the second video in their series, I forget what they call the series, but they have
a
series,
isn't it?
Yeah, like TikTok. That's right. So they had, the first one was amazing. And then the second just came out a couple of days ago, and it's on the Inside EVs website, and we're showing it here on the screen on, if you're watching this on YouTube. The Lucid Air is very roomy inside for its size. Here's how they did it, and it's got Peter Rawlinson, the CEO, you know, there is Lucid Tech Talks, giving you the rundown. And if you haven't watched this yet, it's actually, I meant to watch this yesterday and I ran out of time, so it's on my menu for today, and I just want to recommend that for everybody.
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet. The first one was awesome. Peter's a great communicator.
Yes. Yeah, really? I was so really good. Impressed. Yeah.
Especially if you're into this nerdy stuff, as we all are. And I'm sure most people watching the podcast are.
Right.
Yeah.
It was so funny, though, guys. Just a quick story. So I, in my line of work, I do a lot of events. And I was working the Formula One Grand Prix in Miami for McLaren. I was with their Arturo, which is the plug-in hybrid that they're launching this year. It's coming out this summer. But so I was working with McLaren at the F1 Grand Prix. It was an amazing experience. It was like, pinch me, is awesome because I really love motorsport. But anyways, so the race was about to start on Sunday, and we all head back to, we had two locations, a race house and another spot where we had another car there. And Arturo was out on display right in front of the track. And we come back to that location because the race is about to start, as I said. But I go up to the car and I see someone sitting in it. And I was like, I peeked inside and I'm like, gosh, this guy looks so familiar. And he's looking around. I'm like, oh, is there anything I can help you with? Any questions I can answer for you? Because I'm there for education. So any questions that they have about the car, I can answer them. And he turns around and looks at me and he's like, oh, no, you know. Just that the power plant isn't exactly what I think it should be. And this guy's wearing a Lucid shirt. And I'm like, okay, I hear you. And it's actually the chief engineer. It's Eric Bach. And I'm like, I like your shirt. And he's like, thanks. It's like, yeah, so I understand as to why you think that. So do you work for Lucid? Because you look really familiar. You look like the chief engineer. He's like, yeah, I am. I'm Eric. I'm like, oh, nice to meet you. You know, I'm obviously I'm a contractor for McLaren, but you know, and I've had a relationship with them since 2015. I've worked with them for a really long time. But, you know, I work for a lot of brands, but, you know, I also have a channel called Misco Electric. And yeah, I cover a lot of EV stuff. So it's really great what you guys are doing. And so I start telling him, I'm actually going to be in your car next week trying to do the world record. And he was just like, what is going on? Like, well, I'm so confused. And then he's like, well, you should talk to Peter. And I turn around and Peter's like looking inside the car. And I'm like, what? This is so weird.
That's awesome.
So yeah, so I got to talk to him for a little bit. And he was just, you know, so excited about what they're doing. And that's just translated so well to me, and I thought was really cool. And he was like, you know, right now we're focusing on, you know, obviously trying to get this car out and doing the best we can, but I'm also looking at stuff 5 years out and everything like that, and you know, the future seems very bright. So he was just really, really like enamored with talking about EVs, and I was like, this is great. Yeah. Like, I don't mind having this conversation right now. I was not expecting it, but nice to meet you guys.
Right on. Checking out the McLaren Arturo. I wonder what if they have like something like that in their product plan down the road. The next thing they have is the SUV, the Gravity, right? But
well, they were at the only way you could get in the McLaren race house was because you had like invited. And right. So I think that since this was before they announced it, but McLaren and Ativa, you know, their battery supplier for Formula E. Right. They had been working together at McLaren Applied, because McLaren Applied supplied this year's version of the batteries for Formula E. Right. But McLaren just announced that they are taking over the Mercedes EQ Formula E team, and they are going to be an entrant now in Formula E. So it didn't make – I was like, interesting that they're here, but then now it makes perfect sense that they were at the race house because, you know, McLaren's now going into Formula E.
Right. Interesting. Cool. And if McLaren wanted to actually go into electric drivetrains too, I mean, Lucid might not be the worst company to work for. They've got like a super high output, small footprint drive powertrain. So I think we're up against the time. Yeah, we're way up against the time. So I think that brings us to the end of our show. If you have any questions or comments, you can leave them on the Inside EVs forum podcast thread or on our YouTube or Twitch comment sections. If you like the show, please, please, please give us a thumbs up if you're watching us on YouTube, and that will help other people find us. So I'd like to see lots of thumbs up, or Tom will give you a talking to.
Click that like button. I think we only had like 70 likes a little while ago. Come on, guys.
All right. Don't forget, you can find and follow our panelists on Twitter. You can follow Tom Malogny at Tomalog. That's with two M's. Kyle Connor when he's here, and when he's not here, he's on Twitter at It's Kyle Connor. Lacey, you're at Misco Electric. Mm-hmm. And also the YouTube channel. Like and subscribe to Misco Electric YouTube channel. And I'm at Dominic_Y. We'll see you all again next week. And let me hit their outgoing button.
Thanks for having me.